I'm Nisa Hopkins, host of Women of Power and Spirit, Healing and Awakening in the Sacred Feminine. In this series, we are exploring the depths of the Sacred Feminine in real life. When I refer to the Sacred Feminine, I'm talking about the kind of energetic qualities or yin nature within us all that are necessary for living a balanced, healthy, and happy life. The qualities of the Sacred Feminine or yin nature of a person include stillness, compassion, receptivity, intuition, creativity, and that deep, quiet place within us that beckons us to open up more fully to our potential, not through more action, but rather through greater clarity and inner peace. I've met many women that have nearly died or did die and returned because their lives were spinning out of balance in their desire to achieve, or because they were connected too deeply to beliefs and practices that no longer serve them. I'm one of those women, so I know what it takes to finally stop everything and settle into truthful awareness of yourself. Many of us experience moments of revelation when we stop, and that's when our spiritual gifts open and we are finally able to be who we truly are. In those moments and in the sharing of our stories, every woman can find hope. And now we are going to listen to one of those stories from Lee Chapin. Lee was sexually abused as a child and has overcome the challenges of her abuse by forgiving the perpetrator. Now she tries to help others empower themselves by healing their wounded self and moving into a place of self-empowerment. She found her way through with her connection to spirit, and she attributes her healing to her spiritual mentor, Cecilia Kelly, who introduced her to the power of forgiveness and the world of metaphysics. This led her into her own self-examination and journey of healing, along with her connection to the Ascended Masters and the Celestial Realm. Now she chooses to live her life with great joy and enthusiasm and to be of assistance to others who suffer and who continue to suffer in silence. She is currently creating a foundation to help stop human trafficking and assist the victims and their families in their recovery. You can learn more about Lee at her website, celestialconnections.biz. Again, that's celestialconnections.biz. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be with you today.
Oh, I'm delighted that you are, and I'm hearing there's a very powerful story here that quite a few of us can probably relate to. I know I certainly did when you started right out with, yes, I was sexually abused. So was I as a child, and I know what kind of challenges those can bring up. Physically, emotionally, it's a huge, huge journey. So I'm hoping that you'll talk with us a little bit about, maybe to start out with, what do you feel is your kind of your mission in your life now? Did we talk about that in the introduction, or is there more that you could share about your mission in your life?
My mission was always to be in service to God. I remember when I had discovered that I was abused. I didn't know till I was 26, and I was working as a mental health therapist, and I knew something was wrong with me. I was trying to help other people, but I knew there was something wrong, and I just knew at that time that I wanted to be as clear as possible to be able to serve God to the best of my ability, and I didn't know what it was then, and that's how I was able to tap into being abused because I had repressed the memory, and a therapist had helped me to unlock a couple of those memories. But I just remember saying that was the beginning when I was 26 years old. I'm 56 now, so it's been 30 years. So my journey has evolved and changed through many incarnations of what I call my career path. So I think I'm on my fourth career path now. So if you want me to explain that, I always chuckle.
Sure, sure. I think I have an idea about your path now, but why don't you share a little bit more about that and how you came to the path, the career path that you're on now?
Well, I have a master's degree in counselor education and a bachelor's in psychology, and I worked in mental health for the very first 10 years of my career. And then I just intuitively felt that there was a better way of helping people, but I didn't know what it was. And in 1988, I knew that I had to get out of that field because of my own abuse. I still had trouble with depression and anxiety, and that work was, I didn't realize at the time, but I was a deep empath and overly sensitive to other people's energies, and so it was just overwhelming me. And I remember thinking, God, if I have to do this the rest of my life, you know, I'd just rather die, because I didn't really know how to take care of myself. So about 1987, I met this lady that was a massage therapist, and for some reason, intuitively, I knew that I could do that work. And so I was living in Illinois at the time, and I'd moved to Sarasota, Florida, and took my training in massage school. And then I moved back to Illinois, my hometown. In 91, I opened up my own massage business and wanted to help people do emotional healing work through what I thought was going to be body work. But in 1993, I spontaneously began to channel the words of spirit. And to my delight, that work has evolved, and I now work with the Ascended Masters in the celestial realm, and I'm a universal channel, so I channel a variety of beings of the light. So my job now is to help empower people to understand their aspects of their life that they've been struggling with, and a lot of that comes from past life incarnations, and spirit will come in and provide information to people about what's happening in their lives, and most generally will bring about spiritual healing work. So I work with people individual and groups. And then the past 4 years, I felt led to move into finding missing people and moving into the human trafficking world. I got very connected to the Natalie Holloway case, and been working with that for the past 4 years, but more strongly within the past 6 months.
Involved with the case itself, is that what you're saying, or that it's been a motivator for you in creating your foundation?
Well, I've been working with the Natalie Holloway case. I believe she was sold into human trafficking and is still alive. And my sources, spirit has said that she will return. I actually woke up a year ago, October, and Natalie's spirit came to me and explained to me that she and I had been sisters in another lifetime, mm-hmm. and that she had agreed to go through this path to be sold into human slavery, and I would be the person who would then be able to speak up about it and to draw attention to it, but she had sacrificed herself. And she told me that she would see me, you know, in a few months, and that was October of 10. It was actually Halloween night, and I was shocked because I'd been obsessed with her case for such some time, and that brought clarity to me. So I've been bringing forth information about where her whereabouts are and trying to bring her safely home, at least with the work of spirit, because I've given information to the FBI, and I'm not sure if it's been listened to or not.
Well, oh, that's curious. How did they respond to that kind of information? Did they catalog it as another person calling in, or did they... they actually spend some time with you to listen?
No, they have not. I've given a lot of information to a lot of cases because I haven't successfully solved any cases yet. I'm just actually getting more information now. And I gave information to the police on a Michelle Parker case here in Orlando that's been on the national news. And I worked with the police last weekend with another case here locally in Sarasota, Florida. I'm just beginning to have the law enforcement listen to me. But with Natalie Holloway, I actually did call the FBI. I did give information to the FBI, and I don't really know what they've done with it. So.
Yeah, I understand that it may take a little bit of time. It may take a proven case for them to begin to have confidence. But thank goodness that you're continuing to follow the guidance that you're receiving and getting that information, though. That's the only way it will be confirmed.
Well, the thing about me is I'm pretty persistent and I'm determined. So I think being abused had a lot to do with that. Maybe I came in that way. But I just knew when I was a young child that I wanted to go to college and I wanted to pursue a career. And I was very determined that I was going to college. My family didn't have any money, but somehow I got it all figured out and got a master's degree, and got my education. So I've always been very determined about things. Just because someone doesn't listen or tells you no, I don't really take note to that. I just proceed on as what I feel I need to do, and as I listen to Spirit work through me, I just keep marching and asking God to help me, show me what to do and open the doors to find a way to do what I've been asked to do.
My goodness, that's a tremendous quality to have in one's life, and to be able to be so dedicated to your own intuitive wisdom and to, you know, Spirit's voice coming through you is not something all of us get to easily. So how is it that you have this ability to be this true to your inner voice? Is that something you developed? Is it something you've had since you were a child? Talk to us about that.
No, I never had it as a child. I started, like I said, in 1993. I was getting a Reiki session, and I just felt like I was supposed to get a message. And then, lo and behold, I started channeling. But I had a reading probably in about 1986 from this lady who told me that I could channel, that I could bring messages from Spirit. And she told me how to use a pendulum and do automatic handwriting. And I worked with it for a while, and then my life changed, and I totally and completely forgot all about it. And then that day, it was March 21st, 1993, I began to channel, and it was the same guides this lady had told me about in 1986. So it had been 7 years later, minding my own business, and then it was just like a light switch coming on. And I've been able to do it ever since. But I knew it was my guide, Grand, that this lady had told me about 7 years later. And I knew what I was doing. I wasn't scared, but I was shocked. And then I remember the lady told me that I could do this. So, yeah, I've been persistent with this since 1993. So that's where I've developed my confidence and work with Spirit, because I work with them every day. And I trust what they tell me. And I've worked with hundreds of people, and people tell me all the time that I've helped them, that my information has helped them to grow, and that I've made a tremendous difference in their lives. And some people tell me that, you know, my work with them has been life-altering. So I just trust the work, partially because I've been doing it quite some time, and because of the feedback, of course, from other people, but mainly just because I trust my work with Spirit. I know that I'm probably not 100% accurate channel all the time, but I do trust what I hear with him. And I respect Spirit and have great reverence onto them, and I always feel grateful and blessed for their connection. So my aim is to get my ego out of the way to be as a pure channel as I possibly can.
That's beautiful. Lee, did you find, I'm just curious, that opening you talked about occurring when you were hearing, do you think there was any correlation to your own emotional healing, physical healing from the sexual abuse and emotional abuse comes with that, of course, as a child? Do you think there was any correlation there?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of
it was a long question. Let me reframe it. In my own experience, I found that my intuitive channels really opened as my own healing with my sexual abuse settled, you know, when I was more calm and at peace.
I see. Uh-huh.
Did you find that there was a correlation in your own healing journey, you know, in regard to when your gift really opened up, your ability to your Spirit opened up?
Well, I never thought of it that way. I was in my 30s. I still struggle with residual emotions. I felt like at that time I was in a good space in terms of where I was at, but then looking back, or now it's been almost 20 years, it'll be 19 years in March, I can say, no, I still was messed up.
Not necessarily a correlation. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, today I feel very healthy and very happy, and I feel like I probably matured Well, I'm 56. I probably matured since I've been 50, to tell you the truth. So, yeah, probably.
You've been 50 just the last 6 years?
6 years, I've finally grown up, you know. That's how I feel.
Well, there's no hurry.
Yeah. Well, just emotionally feeling more secure within myself, because I was very insecure and not very confident with myself. I remember thinking I wasn't very smart, even though I had a master's degree. Very insecure, and I don't feel those things now. So I know that what I'm good at, and I know I'm not good at lots of things, and that doesn't really matter. I always say that's not my area. So, yeah, I'm settled now. But no, Spirit just worked with me. My work with Spirit really was that which helped me to heal.
Mm-hmm.
I had worked with it through getting counseling and reading and having my mentor help me. But when Spirit came in my life in 1993, that was the I give them all credit for helping me to heal with the healing and the wisdom that they brought through me. So, yeah, I give all credit to Spirit.
Mm-hmm. So it really was a moment, not something you were building up to or working up to. It was a moment, one of those special occurrences that happens, maybe pre-planned, maybe it's a portal of energy that's there, and you were willing to allow your empathic self to really fully receive their insights. It sounds like there was some magical moment there that occurred.
It sure was. I was
what that was like?
And delighted. Yes, I was. I was thrilled. I remember going to have pizza with my friend afterwards and saying, "Did I make that up?" And she goes, "Did you make that up? Did I make that?" You know, but we knew that something had happened, so it was quite exciting. And I've been dedicated with Spirit. I worked with Grand for 4 years, and then the Archangel started coming to me, and then, to my delight, Jesus and Mother Mary and Mary Magdalene. And so I quickly worked or moved with Mother Mary and Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and now I work with a variety of beings, Isis and Horus and the Syrians and the Palladians and Metatron and Kryon and Saint Germain and Saint Michael and Archangel Raphael. So yeah, now I'm just open. But for 4 years I worked with one guide, so it was very magical. And then when I started working with Mother Mary and Jesus, I didn't understand, but I do understand now why. I had lived in the lifetime and was Jesus' cousin, and I was raised by Mother Mary, so I can understand my connection now and why I have such a deep connection to them, and why I feel like I've been blessed, because I was taught by Mother Mary.
Mm-hmm. So that empathic ability has really opened up a lot of doors for you to be able to connect with all kinds of spirits in different realms and to be able to receive information for people.
Yep, sure has.
Yep. But let's talk about that empathic nature a little more deeply, because one thing I do know is that if you've been abused and you're an empath, I really think there's a very, very deep way in which the abuse impacts your life and is harmful to you. I think it's very challenging to heal from an abuse that goes so deeply into your psyche and into your spirit. So would you talk a little bit about your healing process from the abuse? What was that like for you?
It was extremely painful. Like I said, I was 26. I was working in the mental health center with my first mental health job. And it was a very small mental health center, which sounds funny now, but there was three clinicians, a secretary, and once a week a psychiatrist. And so they allowed me, my boss, which was one of the clinicians, let me have free counseling with the other therapist who I felt very connected to. And once a week I would get free counseling. And one day there was a memory that was triggered of my abuse. And I had repressed that memory. And it was a frightening moment, because I remembered that I had been molested, and that my stepfather had molested me or touched me to orgasm. And I was probably 9 or 10 years old. And I remember in that moment of feeling like a frightened deer, and I screamed, I lost my mind, I lost consciousness. And I ran to the door, and I thought, oh my gosh, the secretary's going to hear, lost consciousness again, was very confused, and then somehow my therapist, my friend Mike, was pulling on my arm because he didn't know what had happened to me. I frightened him, and I started hyperventilating, and then he got me back on the couch, and I was hyperventilating, and I remember him looking at his clock, and it was like 7 minutes by the time that happened until I came back into myself. And I have a very funny sense of humor, so even in a traumatic moment where I literally lost my mind, and I think I could have gone crazy then, but I didn't, I feel like I had enough ego strength, I brought myself back, that I looked over him and said, well, I guess you want to know what happened, huh? And so just this relief, like, oh my God, she's back. And so that was the beginning of realizing that I had been molested and that I had felt like a frightened deer, that I'd been trapped like an animal, and I couldn't get away. And so I was trying to replay running away in that moment, but I didn't, you know, I froze during the abuse. And the next day I felt like my brain had been fried, like I had taken drugs, like every neuron had been, or neurotransmitter, like my head was just like so blinged out, and because I've always been anxious, and so it was like I was like a zombie. And then I realized I had to confront my stepdad. He was still alive. He lived with my mom. They were still married, and I was deeply afraid to do this, but I knew I had to. And I was afraid that my mother would not take my side or would not love me, or I'd be ostracized from the family. And I ended up having a panic attack prior to having to tell her and confront my stepdad. And I was able to do that. And, of course, he denied it. And he threatened to call the sheriff and kick me out of the house. And my mother's reaction was strange. I mean, I don't really remember all what she felt, but she seemed to take my side at the time. But since then, she's been in denial, and my stepdad was in denial, and they would act like that had never happened. And I would, and so then that was in 1993, and I decided to move to Florida, and I was 27 years old. And I was led to meet my spiritual mentor, Cecilia Kelly, and she opened me up to teaching me how to forgive and introducing me to metaphysics. And that forgiveness is a long journey. I don't know if I've ever totally forgiven completely, but I'd say probably 95%, because on the day my stepdad died, he died on my mother's birthday 6 years ago, and the day he died at the house, and I knew he was dying, and something came over me, and I called in Jesus, and I was there, my mom and my sister, and I helped him to cross over, and I asked him to forgive me and that I be forgiven for what I had done to him, because I know everything's a two-way street. And I was really happy that I could help him cross over and that I had that opportunity to tend to him, even if it was for a little bit, because he died very quickly, because I did some Reiki on him. And so I just felt really blessed that I had that moment to help him cross over. And I thought, I've done a good job. I've come a long way. So that was 6 years ago, so I was 50, I guess, yeah. Maybe there's a correlation between when I turned 50 and, you know, my healing, as you said. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's my story.
Right. It does sound like something happened there in that transaction between you that shifted things for you, because you talked about feeling more settled in these last 6 years. That's a very powerful moment, mm-hmm. to be able to offer your love and your assistance to someone that had abused you. Can you talk a little bit about that? How have you been able to shift your feelings, the kinds of feelings that typically come up with abuse are the anger and the betrayal and those kinds of very painful feelings, but to be able to get to a place where you could then hold him in love, because if you're doing Reiki, that's some lovely energy that you're giving to him. So tell us a little bit, how did you get there from that hurt and that pain to that place of love and 95% forgiveness?
You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of it, except I remember my friend Cecilia telling me, you know, if you don't forgive him, you might have to come back in another life and deal with this again. I thought, oh, my God, no, I don't want to go through this again. You know, I want to deal with him again. That was bound to determine that I was going to forgive. So I know everything is attributed to spirit. And, again, when they came in 93, I know that was such a major point. I read a lot of books. I work with spirit every day. They come to me in the morning and give me teachings. I set my alarm clock 30 minutes before I have to get up, and they come in and I hear them. They tell me what I need to know. And I've taught a lot of classes with spirit, and so there's been a lot of information about forgiveness and healing. And so I don't know all the specifics, except that during the time with my work with spirit that I was dedicated to accomplishing this, to mastering this. And I don't know, that's just who I am. I always wanted to be kind and compassionate, and I feel like that I am a good person. And I knew that I was a mess, and I cried a lot. I had more clinical depressions than I could sniff at. I mean, I couldn't count how many times I've been clinically depressed and had a lot of anxiety. And I was just bound to determine that I was going to get my act together. Like I said, I read a lot of books. I've had Reiki healing. I've had counseling. But really, and my assistance with my friend Cecilia in those early days. But, again, it's just spirit has come and worked with me. And that's how I work with people now. You know, spirit has given me the information of how I need to heal. And it's not an ABC for everyone, but if you're willing to trust spirit and to help them, because they know all about you, and they will come in and actually clear the imprints and the emotions from you, and a lot of stuff is carried over from past life. I always thought my abuse with my stepdad was karmic, but it wasn't. I was told it was free will choice, that I was to have been on my path right after high school, but it got delayed for probably about 20 years or so. But for me, it just made sense. It made sense because I wanted to be emotionally healthy. I was in the mental health field, and like I said, I wanted to draw as close to God as possible. So I've done a variety of healing techniques.
What if you were going to define forgiveness for someone else, what is forgiveness?
Forgiveness means that there's no more impact upon you, that you are able to truly, what I say, let go and let God. Whatever's happened to you, there's no emotional punch. There's no emotional pain triggered with it. If you haven't forgiven, then you're going to feel that trigger, that emotional trigger. You're going to feel that hatred, that anger. You're going to still feel like a victim. You're going to just be emotionally triggered. Once you forgive, then that person doesn't trigger you. You're able to, like with my stepdad, I hated him for years. I couldn't stand being around him. And when I realized that I had forgiven him, I kind of liked him. And when he was dying, I felt compassion for him. Mm. And I felt sorry for him. Mm. And he was a human being. And he was suffering. So I knew I had forgiven. So that pain was no longer in my heart. I'm not saying I'm 100% because I don't think I probably ever will be. But I'm telling you, I'm a heck of a lot better than I was. I don't hate him. And like I said, on his deathbed, you know, I helped attend to him. Something came over me and helped him cross over. And I was so blessed to have that. My sister was impressed because she knows what I've been through. That's my half-sister. And she was just surprised at how kind I could be to her dad, you know, with what had happened, because our lives were not easy. But it was just within me, and I knew that I didn't want him to have control over me. And he still pops up, and those emotions still pop up, particularly with my husband. My husband will trigger me and will remind me, he reminds me sometimes of my stepdad. And so I just have to remain calm and realize that nobody has any control over me except me. So I have to take responsibility for when things get triggered. But I don't choose to have hate in my heart. I choose to be a loving and kind person and a servant of God. And that's how I choose to live. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's the answer you wanted to hear, but that's how I have gone through it. Is for me, it's I don't need to have hate in my heart. I just want to be loving and kind and be happy and be joyful and truly be of assistance to other people and let them know when there's no punch anymore, you know you've let it go.
Well, I can really hear something key there, and that you're saying you've chosen to have love in your heart, and that means that when the hate and the anger came up, you were making choices over and over again to shift hate into love and into compassion, into understanding, whatever word capsulizes that, because you don't get to it by accident. That I know for sure. It is a choice, wouldn't you agree, that you make?
Yes.
Repeatedly. I'm yes. going to love. I'm going to find it in me somewhere.
You know, it's only hurting you. The person has hurt you, yes, but you're hurting yourself every day if you're hanging on to the same pain, and I don't want to hang on to it anymore. Lord knows it controlled me for so long, and like I said, it still does to a certain degree. I probably will till I die. I don't know. You know, that'd be nice if it didn't, but I'm not going to say it's not. But I'm much more in control of myself, and when my husband gets mad at me, I try to stay present and not respond. Sometimes I can't, but I have to let him deal with his stuff, but I'm trying not to be triggered by him or by other people. And that works for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that ability to be in compassion, I really appreciate what you're saying here about taking responsibility, because at some point, if you don't, you're the abuser of yourself, and you're doing as much damage to yourself as the original perpetrator may have.
Oh, yeah.
And I think when we realize that it's our responsibility and it is a choice, and that we can choose to respond in compassion to everyone and everything. And I know for me, Lee, there was a moment when I finally realized that the person who had abused me had been abused. And so we were all victims until there was enough compassion from somebody to stop the cycle of victimization, of hurting the people. And when I realized that the person who had abused me had been abused, it was, well, I have the same potential in me, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
So if we all have that potential in us, am I willing to make a choice? And am I willing to find enough compassion in my heart for the pain that this person went through that led them to abuse? Am I willing to see that we all share in that cycle of pain? And once I did, what happened was I actually understood my abuser, and when I understood them, forgiveness was just the outflowing of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that was left was love.
Right.
And so I know that in my work I see people that I think try on forgiveness, and I think there's a real difference between attempting to forgive or saying I forgive or offering a prayer or even a ritual saying I forgive when it's not really coming from a place of understanding. We're all in this together. We're
mm-hmm.
all trying to figure it out. We all do things that we regret. We all have the potential to do very heinous things, but we also have the potential to do incredibly loving things. When and if we choose to take responsibility, that's when it begins. Then we create a loving reality. Does that map onto any of your experiences at all? I'm just curious, as one survivor to another, how does that map onto your reality? Or does
it has. I know that my family has shifted because of my kindness and my willing to forgive, because both of my sisters now are healing their hearts from the abuse by my stepdad and our family dynamics. I have a better relationship with my mother because I held her responsible and was angry at her, and now I can enjoy my mom, my stepmother's past, and even though I forgave him, I am happy to say that he's gone, because I can now spend my time with my mom because they remain married, and there's no pressure, or my mom can truly relax and be by herself and enjoy herself. So I'm happy for her. I'm happy that my mother can not be controlled by someone else, because he still did, and that we kids can be with her. And I was told that we could enjoy our mom, because I basically lost my mom when I was like 8 or 9, until I was 50. And so I'm very happy to have this time with my mother. So I see my mother shifting, I see my sister shifting, and by my experience of what I've done, then I'm able to help my clients and my friends and other people. People don't come to me to receive spiritual counseling or mental health counseling if I was still in the mess that I was in. So I can help people to understand what they're going through, because I have an insight and I have compassion, and I have my education and training, of course, but above all, I know that I have an open and loving heart, and I'm a good listener, and I'm able to help people move through their pain and show them another perspective of it through Spirit's help.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, Lee, that a number of people come to you for spiritual guidance and counseling who have been in pretty serious abusive environments at some point in their life, and they're really looking to find healing, find forgiveness?
I work with a variety of people, but yeah, most of us have been abused in some form or fashion, be it by our families, through our own hands, and again, through the carryover from our past lives, that we're carrying old traumas and old wounds from other past lives, and we've carried them through. So yeah, the people I work with are searching to find peace and understanding, and to, again, to allow themselves to have a peaceful life, but also to, people want to be in service. What I find all the time is people want to find their purpose, and they want to find their passion, and I tell people they have to deal with their own demons in order to be able to truly find their work, because as they move into their work, then that comes with a great deal of responsibility. And if you have love in your heart, then you can better serve. If you're still, have hate in your heart or anger in your heart, you're not going to really be able to bring forth your mission. So I try with the work with Spirit to help people heal from those wounds so they can move into their purpose and mission. And that's the kind of individuals I get who are searching to find their mission, and they don't have a clue. And oftentimes are so confused that they don't understand what's going on with them emotionally. So it's twofold. It's putting some of your demons to rest and facing, your own self, and then being able to understand, oh, this is my mission. This is what I've come to do. I never thought that I would be working, trying to find missing people or people sold into human trafficking. My goal when I was 17, when I went to college, was I'm going to be a mental health counselor. And then I knew there was a better way of helping people. And then I began to channel, work with Spirit. So I wouldn't have guessed that. And like I said, I wouldn't have guessed that I went from a mental health therapist to a massage therapist to my intuitive channeling work to now I'm working, as what I call a remote viewer or a psychic detective to find missing people. And, I'm excited that I'm evolving and growing. I wouldn't be able to do this if I was still suffering, because I would be mad at the people who kidnap people or murder people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to be an objective remote viewer, and it doesn't bother me. I probably don't want to see dead bodies, but I can give the information objectively without getting upset about it.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's because of the healing, because of the way you've been able to carry compassion and love in your heart?
Yes.
What I'm hearing is you're not judging all the people involved. You're simply looking at it objectively and saying, this is what's happened.
Right.
And you
can
do that because of the healing. That's powerful.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. That's a lot of healing. Oh, my goodness. It's tremendous healing, and it's a tremendous gift now because it has led you, as you so beautifully, you know, expressed it, into your true work to be of service to others. So Lee, I want to take a little bit of a leap here. I'm just dying to get you your thoughts about why we come into this world and experience all this suffering. Have you garnered any insights about that with your own experience, with the people that you work with and support? Why do we do this?
Well, it became very clear to me when I read this book called Many Are Called, Few Are Chosen by Heather Ann Harder. I got a hold of this book probably in the mid-90s. And when I read it, it made so much sense to me. It was a channeled book, and make a long story short, we, all of us here on the Earth plane, chose to come to planet Earth to serve Mother Earth. We were spirits. And we lived in other realms. We lived in other galaxies, other universes, other star systems, other planets. And there was a beautiful section in that book called The Conclave. And it was when Lord Sananda, who we know as Jesus Christ, came to the auditorium, and all the spirits from all the other dimensions wanted to come to planet Earth to assist Mother Earth. The agreement was that we would lose our knowingness and our oneness to God, and we would choose to come to planet Earth with a veil placed over us so that we would not remember our true divinity and be able to go through every incarnational experience over and over and over until we were able to re-remember who we truly are in our oneness, and then we would be here to assist the planet during what we call the shift of consciousness, what some people may call the revelation of end times, but it's the shift of consciousness. It's the energy that we're going through now as we're moving into 2012. We are shifting into a higher consciousness. The planet has evolved into a fifth and sixth dimensional frequency, and Mother Earth is in her last stages, and I've been told that we're in the last 10,000-year cycle for Mother Earth, and by the end of the last cycle of 10,000 years, there will be only gentle, loving beings here. So we have come to go through all the experiences that a soul can experience in human incarnation so that we could hold that level of compassion and understanding and be able to forgive and to love and to be at a place where we can return back to the remembrance of our divinity. And so we will all get there at some point. And so the suffering is for naught, and that's what I tell people. I reference that book to people all the time to read it. They will help them to understand that there's a reason for the suffering, and our souls have chosen to come in certain parts of the world with our parents, with a predestined plan of our life plan, I believe. There's a prototype. Or not a prototype, but there's what I call a sketch or an outline of what we are to do with our soul's lessons. And we can choose to be angry and say, poor me, or we can choose to get on with it and realize and understand the real reason that we're here, which is our planetary work for Mother Earth, as well as helping humanity shift into love.
It's beautifully, beautifully expressed, Lee. I've often held this sense that throughout the dimensions of reality, that this is so dense here, that as we transform our experience of being disconnected from spirit, which, or from source or God, that feels to us like all of those horrible, abusive emotions, you know, where we feel unworthy, we feel abused, we are hurt, we are angry, we're in pain. We're in that suffering that as we transform those moments into compassion and love, even if it's the memory of what we've experienced and we transform them into a present state of love and compassion, that that love and compassion reverberates throughout all of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are affecting any place in creation, anywhere that has left in any way their remembrance of being connected to the One,
mm-hmm.
that we are all one and that we all originate from love. It is a tremendous experiment to see how much impact we really can have. How far can we move away from our memory and still regain it and still hold that essence that is from Source? And when you look at your life and you say, oh my gosh, this has been so difficult and so strenuous, it can be difficult to imagine that there was an original purpose for this and that we don't have to linger in the suffering. I think it's a natural place for those of us that go through very, very deep healing to eventually come to, and that is, all right, why the heck did I come here and why the heck did I have to be sexually abused? You know? What the heck was that about? But there, it really is serving a purpose.
In my case, I thought it was karmic. It was free will choice, and it messed me up, but I don't choose to be in that space. I chose it for a long time because I didn't know any better, and that's what a part of my job is, to help people understand that they don't have to stay there. You know, it doesn't have to rule your life. It ruled mine for a long time.
Oh, I completely relate. It did for me, too. It was many years before I remembered. And in fact, the other good news about sexual abuse, and I know you would know this as a therapist, is that you don't have to remember in order to complete some good portion, if not all, of the healing work you need to do. You don't have to remember. All you have to do is be present to yourself and what you're truly experiencing. Has that been your understanding as well?
Right. I only had two memories. And I know it was ongoing. I feel that it was ongoing from like 9 to 12. I knew that I went to go live with my dad when I was 12, and that ended when I wanted to go stay with my dad. But I don't remember when it started. That's the number I get. And I know it was ongoing, but I only have two of the memories. And like I said, one that was, I told you, that was triggered in therapy, and another one, I don't know when that came. But I know there was more, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. I don't have any need to know more. What I remember was plenty enough. So, but it seems like it never happened to me, you know. The exciting thing, if I would call any of this exciting, was I was watching Dr. Drew Pinsky on HLN, and he was interviewing about the Tom Arnold, I think, who was a sexual abuse survivor, and they're talking about the Penn State Sandusky, and the people are coming out, the men are coming out who've been abused. And I was watching that, and it was like there was no connection. There was no trigger for me. I was just a casual observer watching this. It didn't make me uncomfortable. It didn't make me squirm. It didn't make me mad. So it's like, yeah, okay, I'm healed, I'm good. Mm. No emotional trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Lee, I remember having done probably the majority of my healing work around sexual abuse before I ever actually had a memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and I'm thinking about some of the people who may be listening who may not remember, but they're having a whole lot of physical symptoms, a lot of emotional triggers. Their sex lives are one extreme or another, you know, because of the sexual abuse that they aren't remembering. That you don't have to. If you're having enough of the symptoms of sexual abuse, you can go ahead and start into the emotional healing that
right.
is required. And a memory will come when it's safe, or it won't come, but one way or another, you can go ahead. You know that you've been abused, so you can go ahead. You know, we've all experienced some degree of abuse on this planet, so we can start right there. that I have the feelings of abuse, and then begin claiming your self-love and your self-dignity and your self-worth again. And then our spiritual gifts, in my experience, really do open up. We really are able to use them because we now don't have to be afraid, which is what happens when we've been abused. We close down everything, including our spiritual gifts, often.
Mm-hmm.
This is not safe to connect with them because it's all connected to the abuse. So once those core feelings are addressed, as your life is really demonstrating, you know, here you are with these beautiful spiritual connections that your empathic abilities have allowed you to have, and to then to be able to share that in service, a service that you knew you had when you were little, that you were going to be in service to God, you know, and you were from beginning to end, bless your heart, even through the, you know, healing from the abuse. You were very clear about your service. So tell us a little bit more about this. Now, you're channeling a whole lot of different beautiful beings out there, and I know you and I have talked a little bit about this. You mentioned earlier that you had called your father Jesus. Do you want to talk about what that was in retrospect when you reflected on that? What do you think that was?
You lost me on that one.
I think that, you said that, when you were there.
Oh, when my stepdad passed away, I called on Jesus, you mean?
Oh, you called on Jesus. Okay.
Yes.
I thought you had said you called him Jesus. So I was thinking, that's interesting. What you called
on. When he was passing away, when he was dying, I called upon Jesus to help him cross over. And I had asked my stepdad to forgive me for anything that I may have done to him, and that I asked, you know, that I forgive him. And then I asked Jesus to help him cross over, and he died very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was saying.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. And then taking this work into really helping locate missing people and people that have been sold into slavery, and just it's very touching to see where your life has taken you and the beautiful work that you're doing for others.
Well, I don't, this is what I want to do. I want to start a foundation. I haven't started it yet, beginning stages of that, but I really want to be able to help if there are victims that have recovered, as well as their families, if they've, you know, been killed or murdered or abducted and never be found. I really want to help the victims and the families to forgive, and I want them to be able to find closure, but I want them to find peace within their hearts. I've never had anybody murdered in my life, you know, or anyone taken away, so I can't imagine that, but I know what pain is, and, you know, in a sense, I had my life stolen from me to a certain degree, or I allowed it to be, you know, all those years, but I really feel it's important because just like the Amish, I remember there's, I can't remember the exact story, but how, what was it? Somebody murdered their family, and the Amish welcomed the family of the murderer, because I think the murderer maybe had like a homicide, suicide kind of a thing. I can't remember exactly when this was, but I just remember the story in a sense that the people who's had their family members killed, the Amish, they took in the abuser's family and helped them because now they didn't have somebody to provide, you know, for them. I thought this was a true act of forgiveness. So I want to be able to provide counseling services for victims and families so they're not suffering for the rest of their life, so they can find peace and comfort if they so choose and allow. I know that's a tall order, but I know it can be done.
It is indeed, but it is very, very powerful. If we can find that kind of compassion in our hearts at the worst of times for us, then
yes,
truly the divine is living in all things, and it's evident through us.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Lee, do you have any last thought you'd like to leave us with today?
Just I want people to know that if you truly turn your life over to God, And as you begin to allow yourself to let go and let God and truly develop your faith deeply, that your intuition, your guides, your master teachers, and the energy of God will help you through anything that you're suffering from. Because I'm living proof of that. And as you heal, then you help another person. And as Spirit always says, each one teach one, each one lead one. And as I take your hand and lift you up, then you can take somebody else's hand and lift them up. And again, that's how peace will prevail upon the planet, one person at a time, evolving, forgiving, loving. And that's what I want to end my message with today.
Oh, that's so beautifully, beautifully spoken, my dear. Thank you very, very much. And thank you for doing your own healing work. Thank you. We don't get thanked for that, you know, Lee, but it's so important that we do it because that is the real work. So thank you for having the courage and the dedication and persistence, as you said, to find your compassion, to find your love, to find your trust in God, and then to hold that space for others to find the same within themselves. I really honor you for your work here on the planet, sister. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, to help, hopefully to be of assistance to, you know, to someone else. That's just my aim, is my goal, if someone's listening, and maybe that will plant a seed for them, you know, and they can find that healing and that peace within themselves. So thank you again. God bless you.
My delight. And I want to thank everyone who's listening to this program today. I want to thank you for being here because some part of you knew there was something that you needed to hear that would support you and help you in your courageous journey, in your own healing, in your own evolution, in your own awakening of the divine within you. So honor to all of you that are there and with us in this story, in this beautiful story from Lee today. Thank you all. May love, compassion, and truth prevail. And I look forward to our next time together. Goodbye, everyone.